Hello and welcome to Patriotic History. Today's date is Friday the 30th of December 2022 and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at RadioAlbion.com. This programme is actually being pre-recorded and we haven't actually had Christmas yet, but of course I do hope all our listeners have had a very wonderful Christmas. We are going to continue today talking about Christmas traditions and of course I have with me my two co-hosts, TrueFids from TrueFids.net and Patriarch from the Patriotic Arts Community. TrueFids, good day, sir. How is life treating you?
Yeah, all good. Just enjoying the snow and the cold. I don't mind it personally, but yeah, all good, man.
Well, it's very nice that you actually have snow where you are. It's a beautiful sunny day where I am. Patriarch, how are you? How is life treating you?
Very well, Sven. Yeah, I'm on the weather front. I'm somewhere in the middle. So we're slightly frosty, but not there yet. Maybe we'll have a white Christmas this year in more ways than one.
Certainly having some crispy mornings, aren't we? Crispy, frosty mornings. It does have a very Christmassy feel to it this time of year. And some years, I mean, you just get sort of wet, mizzly weather. So it is nice to have proper Christmassy weather over Christmas. And especially as we're going to be talking about Christmas traditions today. And in the last episode, we left off talking about Father Christmas and the uniquely British parts of the tradition, and that leads us on to Puritanism. The rise of Puritanism led to accusations of popery in connection with pre-Reformation Christmas traditions. When the Puritans took control of government in the mid-1640s, they made concerted efforts to abolish Christmas and to outlaw its traditional customs. For 15 years, from around 1644, before and during the interregnum of 1649 to 1660, the celebration of Christmas in England was forbidden. This suppression was given greater legal weight from June 1647 when Parliament passed an ordinance for abolishing of festivals, which formally abolished Christmas in its entirety, along with the other traditional church festivals of Easter and Whitsun. And of course, it was Oliver Cromwell that was responsible for this. And I do find this actually surprising that it was the Puritans that got rid of Christmas, and yet it was the Protestants that were the first ones to put candles on the Christmas tree. So it's quite bizarre that you have one group of Protestants that are banning Christmas and another group of Protestants that are starting off a new tradition with hanging candles upon a tree. And I can understand them wanting to get rid of what they saw as idolatry, but to just get rid of all festivals. I mean, we're not supposed to just be miserable all the time. We are supposed to celebrate the good things in life. And it seems to me that the Puritans went a little bit too far trying to get rid of Christmas. I mean, how did they think that was going to go down amongst the general population, abolishing Christmas? I mean, it sounds quite wicked today, doesn't it, when you think about it? TrueFids, any thoughts on the Puritans abolishing Christmas?
Yeah, I think Oliver Cromwell was also involved with the Puritans. And the Puritans, you know, when Europeans colonized America, different, you know, Protestant sects set up their own, you know, they all tended to mingle and go to certain places. And I think up north, there was a big Puritan place and they banned Christmas there. But of course, there were loads of other states. So they didn't win out and Christmas came back because, you know, they couldn't force that on all the other states. Right. And I personally don't really mind if people celebrate, you know, Christ and all that. Obviously, I can understand people wanting to get rid of any pagan rituals, but I think the days are just gone where, you know, you can rule over other people and force your will. You just got to realize it's going to happen and just worry about yourself and, you know, your family, and that's all you can really do. But it is good to celebrate Christ and try and go that way, you know, when you're meeting up with friends and remind them that's what we're really celebrating, right?
Yeah, that's the central point, isn't it? Christ Mass and the general celebration around the midwinter solstice. I mean, that's just gone on since time immemorial and the various traditions that have become associated with it. But as long as you make Christ central to that, then yeah, I don't see what the problem is with it. Patriarch, any thoughts on this?
Yeah, I think obviously, Puritanism is something which, well, they're obviously striving for absolute purity, which is something that they're never going to get for a start. So obviously they try and tackle anything they deem as sort of polluting to the faith. But as Truth had pointed out, you know, you can't stamp things out. And I think it's been part of a cultural tradition, really, to you know, have these kind of festivals. And I think along the ages, it's just been a matter of trying to incorporate it and manage it, or kind of steer it with a deeper focus, you know, because I don't think you can completely stamp it out.
Yeah, you've got to have something to lift your spirits in the middle of winter as well. And this is at the point when the days start getting longer again, and we start getting more sunshine. So now would be the opportune time, you know, to have a big feast and cheer everybody up and look forward to the spring and the summer again. It's you know, it's important, I think, that we mark the turning of the year as well. I think it says in the Bible that that's the reason why we were given the stars, for the signs and the seasons, so that we knew what the season was. So we observed the changing of the seasons, and that's a part of it. And then if you make Christ central to that, then that just seals the cake, really, doesn't it? If you put Christ right at the center of it, and you believe that was the central point in history, then that's what you're celebrating. Well, it was in the context of this ban of Christmas that royalist pamphleteers linked the old traditions of Christmas with the cause of king and church, while radical Puritans argued for the suppression of Christmas, both in its religious and its secular aspects. In the hands of royalist pamphlet writers, old Father Christmas served as the symbol and spokesman of the good old days of feasting and good cheer, and it became popular for Christmas Tide's defenders to present him as lamenting past times. It's interesting, isn't it? You can imagine, like, you know, like people might put out flyers today, or we put out leaflets, and they would have similar things back then featuring Father Christmas, and he was the symbol for the good old days that we had before the Puritans banned everything. It just seems to me that things don't change that much, do they? And I like the idea of Father Christmas being the symbol of rebellion, and the rebellion was wanting to go back to the traditions. So people still wanted to go back to traditions, even back then in the 16th century. It's not something new today, this traditionalist urge that we have. And I never really thought of Father Christmas as being a symbol of rebellion before, but obviously was at this point. And this is when they got rid of the king, wasn't it? They killed the king as well. So don't forget, the people that were trying to get rid of Christmas, they'd also murdered our king. And that's, again, the killing of the king is part of a black magic ritual, isn't it? And then you've got this Bolshevik idea of getting rid of Christmas. I think they also got rid of singing and dancing and music. They were absolute thugs, weren't they? Cromwell's gang. I do find it a shame that some people today do look up to Cromwell. He also brought in the Bank of England, and he handed that over to the Dutch Jews. William of Orange, this was, because William of Orange was brought over to then be the king. And all of this led on from Oliver Cromwell, when he was made Lord Protector of the Commonwealth. And I think all of the things that he did, basically, we can link with rebellion against the natural order of things, which is to have a king, which is to have religion, which is to follow Christianity. He claimed to be following Christianity, but to just get rid of all the nice things in life. And the way that he went into Wales, and he destroyed a lot of Wales, and he went into Ireland, and he destroyed a lot of Ireland, brought the Jews back in to set the bank up, which is another thing that we'll look at eventually in the Patriotic History series. It's a shame that people still seem to hold him in good stead today. I can remember learning about Oliver Cromwell at school and being told that he was this wonderful character, and he wanted to scale back the king's power so that we had the start of this wonderful democracy that we have today. Any thoughts on any of that, Truth Hits?
Yeah, I think you're always going to have a hard sell trying to get rid of everything. It's just never going to really work, right? Because as I said, you can't rule over everyone. You can only set the good example. But yeah, that what you were saying was also the transfer of power, right? Holland had a massive empire at that time. Formerly, it had been Spain and Portugal. And then that they saw something in England. They saw there was more potential, and gradually the power base was moved to Britain, and they propped it up, and that's where we got the British Empire. And then they moved to America, you know, after World War II, England was just tossed to the side. And that's basically been the history behind the scenes as well, right? Behind all this.
Interesting stuff. Patriarch, any thoughts on it?
Yeah, I think they probably would have, instead of trying to get rid of it altogether, they should have just stripped it back a bit maybe and just aligned it more with the core message. And, you know, I think any backlash wouldn't have been so bad then. Just a thought, though, was Cromwell linked to Magna Carta in any way?
I think that was much earlier, wasn't it? That was, wasn't that 11th century, 12th century? I think that was the king before Edward the First.
King John, that was, you know, the bad King John, and Robin Hood. He also was involved with the Jews, and that was the main reason, the Magna Carta, to stop it, their taxation and usury. And then later, his grandson, Edward the First, kicked them out.
That's the one. Yeah, yeah. It was his grandfather. Yeah, that's going back back to the 11th century, and we're talking about the 16th yeah. century here. Well, next up, we'll move on to another character that some people are really shocked to find has anything to do with Christmas, but I really do like the symbolism of this character, and that is Krampus. And Krampus is a horned anthropomorphic figure in the central and eastern Alpine folklore of Europe who, during the Advent season, scares children who have misbehaved. Assisting St. Nicholas or Santa Claus, the pair visit children on the night of the 5th of December, with St. Nicholas rewarding the well-behaved children with modest gifts such as oranges, dried fruit, walnuts and chocolate, while the badly behaved ones only receive punishment from Krampus with birch rods. So he's got birch rods, and I mean, that's like beating the child. So instead of the children just being told, oh, if you've been good, you'll get presents from Santa, no presents if you've been bad. If you've been bad, you're going to get beaten by this devil creature with horns and with this birch rod. He also has a basket there. If you've been really bad, he's going to pop you in that basket, and he's going to take you away to Spain maybe, and sell you to the Moors. You know, I mean, this was there to scare children and to get them to behave, which I think is a good idea. I mean, the sort of Santa that we have today is like hippie Santa. It's like hippie Jesus that just loves everyone and is tolerant of everything. And, you know, the day of the vengeance, the day of the Lord, is a day of vengeance, and all the works of the devil are going to be tossed up into the fire. You know, you've got this vengeance aspect as well as the love aspect, and I think we need to have that with Santa Claus. You need to have this this figure that punishes children if they've been bad behaved, so you could scare the children with that and get them to behave by scaring them with this creature. And I think it's a great shame that that's missing. It's missing from the British tradition. But apparently, this tradition, there's lots of different characters all throughout Europe that accompany Santa Claus. And some people say, well, maybe it is Santa Claus' other aspect. It's the same person. One of them punishes and one of them rewards. A very interesting subject to talk about, I think. Truthfids, what are your thoughts on Krampus?
I didn't actually know much about Krampus, but I do know all the you know, European folklore. If you actually go back to the original, it's very harsh, and it's meant to shock, you know, children, to make them better people and warn them of, you know, the reality and the dangers in the world. And, you know, if you didn't want your kids wandering off into the forest, you'd tell them that there's monsters in there to keep them out, to keep them safe. And of course, here's in this story, it's just one of many ways to try and get your children to behave well so that they'll be rewarded and, you know, explain to them that bad things are going to happen if they're bad with, you know, these monsters that will punish them, right? It was just to try and get good behavior out of their children, right?
Yeah, a lot of people will look at it today and they'll say, well, that looks like it's out of Halloween. That's horrific. What is this doing at Christmas? But it was, you know, it served its purpose. It would get the children to behave themselves, as you were pointing out there, Truford, stop them from wandering off into the forest on their own. You know, you had to frighten children. And I like the idea that he had this birch rod as well. I mean, it says in the Bible, spare the rod and spoil the child. This is effectively a personification of that, isn't it? You know, the person that punishes the bad behaved children. Patriarch, any thoughts on Krampus?
I mean, I've got mixed feelings on it, to be honest, in terms of, you know, the things we, you know, say to our children in order to get good or bad behavior, you know, on the premise of one kind of mistruths or, you know, half truths and exaggerations. Does it affect trust later on? But I can see the benefits of it. You know, sometimes children only learn through, like you say, personifications and visual characters that they can relate to more. And I guess it manifests the fear a little bit more deeper through their imagination, doesn't it? Whilst I can see it as effective and maybe somewhat necessary because it works a lot faster, I would say that a more ideal approach would be to be more kind of rooted in the fear of actual God rather than fear of these external characters. But I see the personification and the relevance.
And it also has a carnival feel to it as well. They have people that dress up as Krampus, don't they, up in the Alps. The origins of the figure are unclear. Some folklorists and anthropologists have postulated it as having pre-Christian origins. In traditional parades and in such events as the Krampuslauf or the Krampus Run, young men participate dressed as Krampus and attempt to scare the audience with their antics. Such events occur annually in most Alpine towns. Krampus is also featured on holiday greeting cards called Krampuskarten. Krampus carries chains thought to symbolise the binding of the devil by the Christian church. He thrashes the chains for dramatic effect. They are sometimes accompanied with bells of various sizes. Of more pagan origins is the root, a bundle of birch branches that Krampus carries and with which he occasionally swats children. The root may have had significance in pre-Christian pagan initiation rites. The birch branches are replaced with a whip in some representations. Sometimes Krampus appears with a sack or a basket strapped to his back. This is to cart off evil children for drowning, eating, or transport to hell. Some of the older versions make mention of naughty children being put into the bag and taken away. And this quality can be found in other companions of St. Nicholas, such as Zwart Piet or Black Pete. Lots of interesting stuff here. You've got the chains here. You've got the fact that he's very dark, the same as Black Pete. And you've also got the fallen angels in the Book of Jude, where we're told that they are bound under chains of everlasting darkness. So there's perhaps a link there. And also this bit that it says here with the birch branches that they try to say has a pre-Christian or a pagan origin. I'm not so sure of that because, as I say, it says in the Bible, spare the rod and spoil the child. And the birch rod is what would be used to beat the child with. So there are a couple of links there. And also it says here with Krampus, he had this basket and you take the children off to hell. You've also got Black Pete, and the legend of Black Pete says that he was a Moor, and one of the legends to do with that was that in the basket the children could go into would go into the basket and they'd get taken off to Spain. And of course Spain was a Muslim country for a long time, and a lot of slavery was going on. So what the Moors would do is they would come to Europe or they would come up from Spain and they would try to capture white people and they would be taken away as white slaves. So there may be a reference to that with the basket that Black Pete carries or the sack that he carries, and the fact that they say that he was coloured black because he was a Moor. I mean, that's just one of the One of the explanations that are suggested for him, there are other suggestions that this blackface comes from going back years. It's the same as the Morris dancers, the blackface Morris dancers that we used to have here. So nobody really knows what the origins of all of this is, but you can make various suggestions for it. But yeah, I find it interesting, the chains that he carries here as the symbol, and also the birch rod. Any thoughts on that, Truefit?
Yeah, I've actually seen this in Holland, where the Zwarte Piets, they would go around schools and basically some of the teachers would just, you know, put black paint on their face, and they would come in sacks and they would throw sweets out the sacks, and then the children would run around and grab them. And then there was told, you know, if you're naughty, we'll take you away in the sack. So it was another way of trying to get the children to behave, right? And that slave trade you spoke of went on all throughout Europe, right, with the Arabs and the Turks, that we were always being raided. And it was actually the British Empire that put a stop to that with, you know, when they ruled the seas, they just ended piracy and all that. So, and, you know, there were pros and cons, but that was one of the pros, right?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure whether we've done an episode on the white slavery, but I'm sure we will have to at some point. Patriarch, any thoughts on this?
I think obviously they're trying to any cultural association nowadays with Black Pete, for example, is obviously classed as racist, isn't it? So they're trying to do away with that, but I guess it is part of our traditions and folklore, and I'm not sure if it's got racist connotations to it, to be honest. Maybe in, you know, it does allude to you know, darker races coming to, you know, to instill a fear in them, but I think it's most likely just to show the kind of the underworld, isn't it, and the demonic spirits.
Well, nowadays, as Truefus was saying there, Black Pete throws the sweets out to the children, and he arrives on a big ship with Sinterklaas. And there's actually a lot of protests that go on, Antifa, and they try to put a stop to it. And then you've got masses of people that remember Black Pete from their childhood, and Sinterklaas, and this big ship that goes into Amsterdam with Santa on this ship, along with Black Pete throwing these sweets to the kids. And, you know, it's seen as a festival carnival for the children. And if it is a representation of a black person, he's throwing sweets to the children. You know, he's not portrayed in an evil light or anything like that. I mean, years ago, I mean, they're saying that there was a link between Black Pete and Krampus, and the idea of the children would actually be punished if they were badly behaved. But nowadays, that's not really there with so much with Zwarte Piet or Black Pete, who we will now concentrate on. The Dutch writer Arnold Jan Scheer has researched European traditions involving Sinterklaas and his assistants. He has published several books about the origin of these traditions and claims the origin of the ones with black skin dates back to 1100 BC in Northern Europe, when pagan shamans put on animal skins and painted their faces black with soot to portray mythical creatures of the underworld. According to Jan, these rituals evolved differently across Europe and eventually led to the development of characters including Krampus, Schmutzli, Knecht Ruprecht, Zwarte Piet, and others. I mean, there's loads of them, actually. I'm very surprised that we don't actually have one of these traditions in Britain. And I'm not sure whether we did used to follow shamans. I mean, we had druids in Britain. We had these Saxon idols, these Odinic idols, possibly, that the Angles and the Saxons had, and that was much later, wasn't it? That was after Christ. And then you got these pagan shamans, but I think the pagan shamans may have been more to do with the Sami tribe, perhaps, maybe some of these Siberians. I think that's where the shaman culture came from, was Siberia. But I don't really see that there's a connection between Siberia and pagan shamans to Christmas. And, I mean, having their faces black with soot, I'm not quite sure where he gets that from or where that would be linked to these characters that also appear with Father Christmas. Any thoughts on this, Truthfids? Do you think this theory has any weight to it?
Yeah, I think it would have been quite different from like the Eastern and African, you know, witch doctors and shamans. The European pagans, you can see in their paganism, there was links to the, you know, the Bible in what they believed with the serpent, the tree of life and all that. And, you know, they all did believe in an afterlife and that you had to, it was kind of turned into more of a warrior afterlife that you had to go fight for your race and your people, and then you would go to Valhalla. But it is quite similar. Whilst you know, all the other peoples, they believed in reincarnation, and you know, if you eat someone, then you gain their knowledge, and you know, cannibalism and all that kind of stuff. Even though European pagans, they did have sacrifice and blood drinking sometimes. That wasn't like common, right?
No, I don't think that was common at all. I think one of the mistakes these researchers make is to look at African traditions and say, well, that must have been the earliest traditions, and then the later traditions of, say, Druidry or whatever must have evolved from that. And I think that black traditions are a completely different group to white traditions, a completely different group to Chinese traditions. I don't think we can just look at black people and their magical beliefs and then, you know, claim that the Christianity or whatever evolved from that. You know, it has a completely different history as far as I'm concerned. And I think that's what this possibly what this author is doing there is, or this writer Arnold Jan Scheer is looking at old beliefs and then connecting them to European beliefs and saying that because we can still see evidence of this old belief today, that must be where this tradition came from. But yeah, I think our theory about it going back to these original Hebrew beliefs is much more believable, much more based on the evidence of what we see. Patriarch, any thoughts on this? Or blackface, Morris dancers? Do you think it all originally came from shamans?
I'm not too sure. When you look up, you know, Black Peter and kind of Google images, and you see how the attire that they dress in with the red lips, the black face, and the kind of black kinky haired wigs, it definitely can see how they might find it more offensive in a modern world, but maybe it's just testament to you know, the fear of you know, the opposing threat, should I say, that going dating back to an opposing threat of other races invading. We've been desensitized to that now, but maybe that's where it was rooted. I don't know. But you can see the connection, and you can see why maybe they thought to make a tradition out of it.
Well, yeah, you had to reinforce the otherness of the other in order to keep the boundaries between the two, in order to keep your people as your people instead of amalgamating with another people. I think that's the reason why we have humour as well. We find jokes about other ethnicities funny. It helps to reinforce the fact that they are different, and because you have to understand the fact that these ethnicities are different to keep them separate, so that they remain and they don't become contaminated by one another. So yeah, I mean, this highlights the fact that these characters are something different from the Europeans. They're something different from Father Christmas. I do think it's possibly a little bit insulting, isn't it, to say that this origin just comes from putting soot on your face, you know, rather than saying, well, this origin comes from trying to make a representation of this other people group. You know, and I guess they just don't see it as being racist to say that it was just putting soot on your face, rather than saying, you know, they're actually trying to represent another people group entirely here. According to Helene Adeline Gruber and other historians, the origin of Sinterklaas and his helpers have been linked by some to the wild hunt of Odin. While riding the white horse Sleipnir, he flew through the air as the leader of the wild hunt. He was always accompanied by two black ravens, Huggin and Munin, and these helpers would listen, just like Zvarte Pete, at the chimneys of the homes they visited to tell Odin about the good and bad behaviour of the mortals below. And we talked a little bit about the links between Odin and Father Christmas in the episode that we did on Odin, didn't we? I think Odin was supposed to have given out presents as well. And remember, one of his names was Jolinir, which meant he had something to do with the month of Yule, which was December. So possibly got these Odinic links as well. And I think, I've said this before, I think that Father Christmas and Santa Claus, I think that is the only authentic tradition that we actually have that is still followed that has something to do with Odin. I think New Age pagans that are having their blots and what have you, these little pagan rituals that they do, they're all just guesswork. They're just guessing on what the Saxons used to do 1500 years ago, because we don't actually have any evidence to prove what they did. So they're just guessing. It's like the rebirth of Wiccanism and New Age, and it all came from people imagining what witches used to do, because they didn't have any proof of it. There was no continuing line of these rituals going through till today. So it was all guesswork and people claiming that they had had visions and they'd seen that this is the way that it was done. I mean, it all just seems like a fantasy to me. It just seems to be LARPing. Whereas Odin as Santa Claus, that is a tradition which has continued all this time. You know, the festival at midwinter solstice, that's continued all this time. So that's the only really authentic Odinic tradition that we have left, I think. Any thoughts on that, Truefids?
Yeah, I think all the traditions would gradually have got merged, and eventually we ended up with Father Christmas. And you know, now I don't know where he lives on the North Pole came from, but eventually that came, and now that's kind of what people believe, right? He's in the North Pole, and we have elves, and he delivers presents. But you can probably trace it all back to different traditions that got amalgamated into what we have now, right?
He lives in Lapland, doesn't he? He's actually got a place out there in Finland, and people go there on holiday to see him and his elves. That's where Santa Claus lives. I guess it is the North Pole is part of Lapland, isn't it, in Finland. Any thoughts on these Odinic links, Patriarch?
Yeah, I think, like Truefid said, with the amalgamation stuff, but it amalgamates according to the culture and society at the time, what's more likely to be accepted and embraced. So where we're at now in terms of Santa Claus, it's just like this hyper-commercialized man under the ideal aesthetic for Christmas, which is a white, you know, white snowfall, you know. So I think that's why North Pole is like the father of Christmas, the father of snow, lives in the North Pole. So you can see where things shift and why they shift.
Yeah, it's interesting that Santa used to wear green as well, and now he wears red because you've got this commercial aspect to it. So it was about the evergreen trees that were, and the green life that was still there whilst everything was dying off like it does in the winter, and now it's become very sanitized. And as you say, Black Pete throws out sweets. I guess you still have the Krampus aspect in the Alps, but we don't have that in Britain anymore, and we don't have that in America. Well, traditionally, Zvarte Pete is said to be black because he is a Moor from Spain. Participants portraying Zvarte Pete typically wear blackface makeup by painting their faces black, wearing exaggerated red lipstick and a nappy or kinky wig, as well as colourful Renaissance attire and gold earrings. The character has become a reoccurring subject of controversy, especially in the Netherlands, for its perceived cultural and ethnic insensitivity. Historically, Zvarte Pete is referred to as a servant and not a companion. Well, that would go back to this idea of Krampus and these characters being the ones that would punish the children. So they would be sent to punish the children by Santa, I guess, subservient to Santa. Because you wouldn't say that Krampus was Santa's companion. I think you would refer to him as a servant as well. I think maybe what they're trying to imply here is a possible slavery link, but I don't see that Svartepete is a slave. I think more likely somebody that captured naughty children and took them back to Spain so he could turn them into slaves. Because that, the tradition says that he is a Moor from Spain. And that's why he's black. You know, not that he has soot on his face, like this theory about the shamans. Like Necht Ruprecht, he was traditionally the one punishing ill-behaved children by beating them with a birch rod, or even taking them back to Spain in a sack he carried, which on arrival contained all the gifts for the good children. However, in the 20th century, these punishments were abolished, and Svartepete became a friendly character, although the punishments can still be heard in Sinterklaas songs. So I guess the Dutch have lots of traditional songs about this as well. I think it's wonderful, all these traditions that we have, these European traditions to do with Christmas. There are so many of them. You know, we couldn't possibly cover all of them in this episode here, but you can see here that the things that connect them is this birch rod. They all have the birch rod for punishing the kids. Interesting that he carries all the presents that Santa's going to give out, and then once the sack is empty, he stuffs the bad children in it and takes them away. I think it is quite endearing, really, this little legend around him. Truefids, any thoughts on that?
Well, I was just going to say that the Arabs were using black slaves. They were bringing them into, you know, their countries and then using them in their military. So perhaps they also were using them on their slave ships. And I don't think there were any blacks in Europe at the time. So if, you know, the Dutch had the legend, the only way they would know really what they look like, apart from, you know, hearing it in stories, would be if the Moors were actually bringing them with them and using them, you know, to go and capture people. So it's possible, right? And on the whole, getting rid of the, you know, the punishment side of Svartepete, that's the that where we're seeing our society becoming very weak and effeminate, right? Where, you know, like on all video channels now, there's no dislikes because it might hurt somebody's feelings. And if a kids play a friendly football team and they lose, well, you don't tell them that they lost. You just say it was a draw. You know, people aren't allowed to lose anymore. And of course, this was the beginning when, you don't get punished anymore, right? Which, you know, it did serve a purpose because you wanted to make your kids behave better, right? And grow up to be better adults.
Yeah, everybody's a winner is the way that things are portrayed today, and there is no punishment for bad behavior anymore, is it? You get praised for it, for being courageous, for being sexually immoral. I guess what they're talking about with children would have been taking things that weren't theirs or what have you. But then the children would grow up to have a self-discipline and a fear of doing wrong, and then you would tell them about, you know, what's moral and what's immoral. You know, don't commit adultery, things like that. And today there's no punishment that people are told for that. It's people are told that they're courageous and brave for coming out and saying they've been homosexual for the last 20 years of marriage. Ridiculous things like that. Patriarch, any thoughts on final thoughts on Svartepete here?
Not too much than what we've said already, but I agree. It's obviously just changing with the culture and an erasure of our culture and the things that kept us in line. So it's kind of expected, I guess, especially since the world's kind of becoming a smaller place and more multicultural by design by those at the top.
Yeah, I never, when I was a kid, I never used to know about all these other characters. You know, I knew about Father Christmas and Santa Claus, but I didn't know about this Svartepete and Krampus and all the rest of it. It's just amazing to me, all these different traditions all the way across Europe. I guess we don't really have that many in the midsummer solstice, do we? I think in Sweden, they have a burning cross, Celtic cross shape that they burn. And they also have a maypole, but we have the maypole on May Day over here in Britain. Perhaps there's a green man tradition, but nothing like all these traditions that there are at Christmas. I mean, it's just incredible to me. There's the number of them. Well, St. Nicholas tradition contains a number of elements that are not ecclesiastical in origin. In medieval iconography, St. Nicholas is sometimes presented as taming a chained demon who may or may not be black. However, no hint of a companion, demon, servant, or any other human or human-like fixed companion to the saint is found in visual and textual sources from the Netherlands from the 16th until the 19th century. According to a long-standing theory first proposed by Karl Meissen, Zwarte Piet and his equivalents in Germanic Europe were originally presented as one or more enslaved demons forced to assist their captor. These chained and fire-scorched demons may have been redeveloped as black-skinned humans during the early 19th century in the Netherlands in the likeness of Moors who work as servants for St. Nicholas. Others believe Zwarte Piet to be a continuation of a custom in which people with black face appeared in winter solstice rituals. And there was, I just remembered then something that I was going to mention to you, Truefids, about the Moors. I mean, they're saying that maybe he was in the likeness of the Moors, but as far as I was aware, these early references to the Moors and the pictures of the Moors, they were white, or at least they look white in the paintings of them. It's very rare that you would actually see a black face in depictions of these Moors from the 11th, 12th century. Perhaps they were darker by this time. I'm not sure what to make of the fact that they say that Santa Claus tamed this demon. Again, perhaps that tradition has then become sanitized as we go through the years. But the fact that he has these chains, that kind of provides a link there to the fallen angels, doesn't it, that are chained in everlasting darkness. I'm just wondering why nobody has pointed that out in these notes here. That's a link to the darkness, and that's also a link to the chains. Any thoughts on what they're saying here about Santa taming a demon, Truefits?
Yeah, I was going to say first that the Arabs originally were very white looking. In fact, it might have been even difficult to distinguish them from Europeans. Maybe you could, but they were very white. It was only because they brought loads of slaves into their society, and because their culture, they have like 10 wives, they would also take black wives as well. And then over like 500 years or longer, eventually the whole race as a whole just kept getting darker and darker, but they would have had some black slaves accompanying them possibly, and that's why, maybe why they had Zwarte Piet, right? So it's possible. With St. Nicholas, that's interesting. I don't know, but yeah, it's interesting that the demons would be considered dark, you know, because that there is a theory that chained in darkness, it's talking about the fallen angels' descendants, right? A possible way to interpret that verse as well, right?
Yeah, definitely. And I think that this could be a reference to that, and it's just not mentioned in these Wikipedia notes. Patriarch, any thoughts on this?
I just think it's likely more character types to reinforce certain behaviour that they wanted, the various threats that they thought were prominent in society, and they just like to keep and maintain them differences, and through instilling kind of fear, and through either entertaining caricatures or just the subject of you know, like mockery. No one wants to be that which is mocked, do they? So I think they're just reinforcing behavior at the time that they didn't want to see kind of prevalent in the society and culture.
I think it's also interesting that obviously this demon is in chains and he's subservient to Santa. and he's used to punish people that have done bad things. So you have good and evil. You have good triumphs over evil, basically, and you have good that is using evil to punish people that have been badly behaved. That's another way to look at this as well. And I'd say there are so many of these characters. One or more demons working as helpers for the saint can still be found in various Austrian, German, Swiss, Hungarian, Czech, Slovak, and Polish Saint Nicholas traditions in the characters of Krampus, Pierre Foutard, Schmutzli, Perkta, Necht, Rupecht, Rubels, Handstrap, Little Babushka, Pelzibok, Klabauf, and Belsnickel. And there's probably even more than that. These companions of St. Nicholas are often depicted as a group of closely related figures who accompany St. Nicholas through the territories formerly controlled by the Holy Roman Empire. The characters act as foils to the benevolent gift giver or strict disciplinarians who threaten to thrash or abduct disobedient children. Mythologist Jacob Grimm associated the character with the pre-Christian spirit Cobalt, who could be either benevolent or malicious. And a kobold is like a hobgoblin or a house spirit. It's interesting again that all of these characters appear in territories formerly controlled by the Holy Roman Empire. And I guess Britain wasn't controlled by the Holy Roman Empire, and we don't have an assistant that travels along with Father Christmas. But I do find it interesting. There's so many different ones here. Little Babushka. So that would be a female one, wouldn't it? That would be, because a babushka is a Russian grandmother, isn't it? So Little Babushka would be a female apprentice or helper that Santa Claus has. Demon. not quite sure what to call them. A helper, an assistant, or a demon, punisher of the child. What do you make of this, Treefids?
Well, I think the idea that, you know, there's demons and devils and that they have red horns and all that kind of came around this time, because originally people didn't believe in that, right? They believed that there were certain people who were devilish, and gradually this depiction, and now we have, you know, heaven and hell, and people believe there's all these, well, you know, the Hollywood movies where you have all the red horns and that, and that's, you know, really push now in all the movies, I think, to distract us. And a lot of these old characters, they were actually based on warnings, you know, like the ogre under the bridge would just be, you know, people who took tolls and controlled all that, and the evil people in the forest who will eat you. You know, it was based on actual real events and real people who they were warning their people about. But gradually it just got turned into, you know, these silly characters, right?
Yeah, I think horns weren't originally seen as demonic. You got statues of Moses with horns. You got Christ in his form of the lamb would have had horns as well. And I think it talks in Revelations that there's one particular vision where he's a multi-horned lamb. And I think what they basically did, because the horns were seen as a sign of kingship or importance, you know, like the king of the beasts, like great antlers that are on the stag, that sort of thing. And I think because of that, what they said was that because these crowns were given to these older deities or older kings, they wanted to say, well, that was idolatry, that was paganism. And then it became associated with demons and devils, because I think it was always associated with royalty and divinity before. So it's just a sort of arbitrary thing that they use that today to signify devils and demons. Any thoughts on this, Patriarch?
Just touching on the point you made about the connection with Holy Roman Empire. I mean, from what we know of governments and centralized control structures today, even they do try to reinforce fear. So that may be why they kind of bring to light and promote a lot of these fearful characters as a means to better control. So that could be why it was more prevalent amongst the Holy Roman Empire.
Yeah, and also, I mean, it was getting the children to learn self-discipline, isn't it, so that they would be able to be disciplined disciplined adults, because you need to be disciplined as a child so that you can learn self-discipline for when you're an adult. The introduction of Svarte Piet did coincide, by and large, with a change in the depiction of the Sinterklaas character. Prior to this change, he was often quite strict towards poorly behaved children and often presented as a sort of bogeyman. Many of the terrifying characteristics that were later associated with Svarte Piet were often attributed to him. The presentation of a holy man in this light was troubling for both teachers and priests. After the introduction of Svarte Piet as Sinterklaas' servant, both characters adopted more gentle personas. The lyrics of older traditional Sinterklaas songs still sung today warn that Sinterklaas and his assistant will leave well-behaved children presents but punish those who have been naughty. They might even take very poorly behaved children to their homeland of Spain in burlap sacks, where, according to legend, they will be forced to assist them in their workshop for an entire season or longer. These songs and stories also warn that a child who has been only slightly naughty will receive a bundle of birch twigs or a lump of coal instead of gifts. That would be pretty horrible, wouldn't it, if you're a kid and you were just given a lump of coal at Christmas. I'm not sure whether these things actually did used to go on, whether it was just used to punish the children. And I think we have confirmation here of the slavery link, where it says that a naughty child would be taken to Spain and forced to assist in Santa's workshop for an entire season or longer. So you've got a link there of them being forced to work as well if they were abducted. So I do think there's elements of the white slavery that used to go on and the Moors slave trade there. Definitely. Any final thoughts on the hippie Santa idea that we have today and Svarte Piet, Treefids?
What I find it interesting, even though it has, a pagan type tradition, it's actually based on real history and you can learn stuff. And now they've completely taken that away and now he's on the North Pole, right? But obviously they had to change that because, they're not allowed to teach the white slavery anymore. That just didn't happen. But it's fascinating that, people knew about this in that if they came from Spain, it was common knowledge. So it has moved from a warm, hot country to the freezing Arctic, cold of the North Pole or perhaps Finland, as you said, right?
Yeah, it's bizarre, isn't it? Imagining Santa and his helpers in Spain. Santa and his helpers is actually like a load of Moors and all the people that they've enslaved over the years. Patriarch, any thoughts on this?
No, nothing new to add, to be honest, on this. I don't know what more to say on this subject of Santa. It's just the nature of traditions and culture, isn't it? Now they change over time, just in line with what's deemed as acceptable.
Yeah, it becomes more and more sanitized, doesn't it? And there is a link, I think, with this old Jesus just loves everybody, regardless of what sins they've committed, or if they continue in living in the sins and carrying out the sins. Old Jesus just loves everybody, and that's this message that the church gives today. And it's the same thing with Santa, isn't it? Santa's got a present for everybody, rather than Santa is going to beat you with a birch rod if you've been a bad boy this year. Well, let's have a look at the first recorded Christmas. At the time of the 2nd century, the earliest church records indicate that Christians were remembering and celebrating the birth of the Lord, an observance that sprang up organically from the authentic devotion of ordinary believers. And that's a quote from these early records. Though Christmas did not appear on the lists of festivals given by the early Christian writers Irenaeus and Tertullian, the chronograph of 354 records that a Christmas celebration took place in Rome 8 days before the calends of January. This section was written in AD 336 during the brief pontificate of Pope Mark. Around 200 AD, Clement of Alexandria wrote, "There are those who have determined not only the year of our Lord's birth, but also the day, and they say that it took place in the 28th year of Augustus and in the 25th day of the Egyptian month Pachon, which is May the 20th. Further, others say that he was born on the 24th or the 25th of Farmuti, which is April 20th or the 21st. Various factors contributed to the selection of December 25th as a date for the celebration. It was the date of the winter solstice on the Roman calendar, and it was 9 months after March 25th, the date of the vernal equinox, and a date linked to the conception of Jesus, celebrated as the Feast of the Annunciation. So that's the reason that's given for why it's in Christmas, because the angel Gabriel's Annunciation was supposed to have been around the March equinox, which I hadn't heard before. So this is the earliest records that we have of it from the second century. What do you make of this, Treefids?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, Christ wasn't born in December. I believe if you work it out, it would actually be in September sometime, because he had a 33 years and a half ministry, right? So when you get to Easter, it's been about half a year. And there's other reasons, I can't recall them. But originally the calendar started in March. That was when the Romans actually started their year. And because, you know, that was when spring started. And then eventually it was all changed to December. Now, you know, we start in the winter, right? And the winter solstice is now the biggest celebration. That's just the way it is, and it turned out, right?
Yeah, I was just thinking there, perhaps it was the Annunciation, which was at the winter solstice, and then the birth was in September. I mean, we are told, aren't we, that the cattle are still out in the fields, aren't they? Which they wouldn't be at the winter solstice, but they would be at around about the September time. So perhaps that's where they made the mistake, is with the Annunciation. You know, when the conception was a winter solstice. I mean, that would make a lot more sense, wouldn't it? I think. Patriarch, any thoughts on this?
Yeah, I mean, I doubt that. Obviously, Christ was born on December the 25th, and I'm not sure that anyone can know exactly, but you know, it just boils down to our cultural traditions and the intent we have behind it, really. I don't think it makes a massive difference whether I don't think the early Christians even acknowledged Christ's birth as a day to celebrate, did they? Yeah. But it worked out to be something that you know, it was a way to push Christianity to adopt it anyway amongst the existing traditions.
Yeah, I'm not sure that they actually honoured anybody's birthday. I'm not sure that was something that was followed. The Orthodox Christians, they have a different date for Christmas. In the East, the birth of Jesus was celebrated in connection with the Epiphany on January the 6th. This holiday was not primarily about the Nativity, but rather about the baptism of Jesus. Christmas was promoted in the East as part of the revival of Orthodox Christianity that followed the death of the pro-Arian emperor Valens at the Battle of Adrianople in 378. The feast was introduced in Constantinople in 379, in Antioch by John Chrysostom towards the end of the 4th century, probably in 388, and in Alexandria in the following century. John Chrysostom is a very famous early church father. I'm surprised that he was linked with actually instituting the Feast of Christmas. And the Orthodox Christians are actually celebrating the baptism of Jesus. Now, didn't that happen much later on, didn't it? It didn't happen when he was a child. It was John the Baptizer that baptized him, wasn't it? What are your thoughts, Truthfids?
Yeah, you couldn't be a teacher under, you know, God's own law until you were 30. So obviously Christ had to wait until he was 30. And that's when he started his ministry, and he had his 3.5 year ministry. And, you know, he died at 33 and a half. So, yeah, it would have had to have been basically around his birthday, right? Which I believe off the top of my head was around September, but, you know, I could be wrong on that. And everyone has different opinions on that. You'll get, you know, a million opinions if you ask different people, right?
Would the baptism have had to have been on the birthday then, or could it be on a different day, do you know?
Well, it wouldn't necessarily have to be on his birthday, but he would have had to at least have been 30 years old, right? Because so, that was the start of the ministry.
Well, I'm just thinking that maybe the Orthodox Christians probably have got the closest or the claim to being the most accurate here, because I mean it could be feasible that he was baptized on the winter solstice, and that's why they say, well, it's not celebrating Christ's birth, it's celebrating his baptism, and we do that on January the 7th. So perhaps they're the ones that have actually got it right, and that's what actually occurred around this time of year rather than the birth, and that we just changed it to the birth. Any thoughts on Orthodox Christmas, Patriarch?
Well, maybe it's, I don't know, I'm just speculating, but if they're celebrating the birth and linking it to the baptism, then maybe it's the birth of not his earthly body, but a sign of the birth of when the Spirit came down and kind of symbolized the beginning of his kind of spiritual fulfillment almost. So I don't know, maybe that's why they link the two.
Yeah, that's a really good point. That is what it could be referring to as well, isn't it? I think, didn't a dove come down when he was baptized or something like that?
Yeah, the heavens opened, and then there was the introduction of the Father. This is my Son in whom I'm well pleased. So it was definitely the beginning of something anyway, that's for sure. But you know, whether it's this, the birth of Christ or his birth of his ministry.
Yeah, I think that's probably what it is, isn't it? The birth of his ministry at this time. So yeah, I find that more believable, obviously, than, you know, oh, it was his birthday that was on this date. December the 25th was considered the date of the winter solstice in the Roman calendar, although actually it occurs on the 23rd or the 24th, or it did at least at that time. It's the 20th and the 21st today. A late 4th century sermon by Saint Augustine explains why this was a fitting day to celebrate Christ's nativity. Hence it is that he was born on the day which is the shortest in our earthly reckoning, and from which subsequent days begin to increase in length. He, therefore, who bent low and lifted us up, chose the shortest day, yet the one whence light begins to increase. Linking Jesus to the sun was supported by various biblical passages. Jesus was considered to be the Son of Righteousness, prophesied by Malachi, where it says, "Unto you shall the Son of Righteousness arise, and healing is in his wings." So we do have these references to Christ to do with the sun. People have also said it was Mithras's birthday on this day, but I don't think that really had that much to do with it. There was all sorts of things that would be celebrated around this time. It was an important time of year. I think if the Annunciation was at this time and the baptism was at this time, then that would have tied in with this. And then obviously we have the link with the sunlight and the sun getting brighter. And as I pointed out in the last episode, I think it's relevant that the sun worshippers that have links with human sacrifice and orgies and all the rest of it, they tend to celebrate Midsummer's Day, and that's when the sun is you've got the most sunlight. And on the winter solstice, the sun has got the least amount of material light, so you're likely to have the most amount of spiritual light at this time. And if you look at the festivals that are actually held at Stonehenge, in the summer festival at Stonehenge, there's a lot of debauchery that goes on, and at the winter festival at Stonehenge there isn't the debauchery that goes on, and there isn't so much drunkenness and all the rest of it. So it's a different feel at winter solstice to the summer solstice. So yeah, all sorts of things are linked up with it. Any thoughts on this? Final thoughts on Christmas and all these things that we've been looking at, or this particular winter solstice section, Truefids?
Yeah, I think in our climate, it's warm in the summer. So if there was pagan debauchery, you know, it's warm outside. So you know, men and women would run off into the woods or whatever. But when it's winter, it's a bit cold for that. So they'd probably want to be inside and warm, right? So yeah. But I just wanted to say, you know, whatever happens, I just think it's best to celebrate Christ, and that's the main important thing. I kind of reiterating what I said. You're always going to get people who have Christmas trees and all that, but it's still good to go see them and, you know, get that communion and stay with your community and your people. And maybe you can pass a bit of knowledge on about, you know, the Bible or something like that, or nationalism, etc. So it's still good to go see your family and folk, even if, you know, they might be a bit more materialistic than you. You can at least see them and wish them a happy, you know, Christmas, right?
Yeah, I think Christmas is also a symbol of rebellion in the culture war, isn't it? You know, because they want to take the Christ out of Christmas. They want to tell us that we should be saying happy holidays instead of happy Christmas. I mean, the word Christmas itself even gets shortened to Xmas, you know, so people don't actually have to say the word Christ. And it's so central to European traditions. It's central to, you know, the central festival of the church throughout the year. It's just uniquely European. It's something that we should be proud of, and that we should really relish, I think, the fact that we have Christmas and we have this tradition of peace on earth to all good men and all that sort of thing. I think it's a lovely time of year. Patriarch, any final thoughts on Christmas traditions?
Yeah, I mean, it's ultimately down to a matter of intent, isn't it? Obviously, we can see, you know, where a lot of the traditions and cultures have stemmed from and kind of, you know, overlapped maybe what would be regarded as pagan traditions. But ultimately, I think it's the intent, and I would celebrate more in kind of knowing that, you know, we've made it central to Christ, or at least we should keep it central to Christ. And it's almost like stamping the flag on top of those former traditions that might be certain sort of symbolic in certain ways. And I think it's important to not be, you know, like the Pharisees in many ways and the Puritans, to kind of try and be so pure where you miss the actual point of a lot of what God's commandments are about. I mean, Christmas is like a time where a lot of the, you know, what you class as the fruit of the Spirit come out. So you've got your love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, and generosity. And, you know, to do away with all of it just because it's regarded as off the back of pagans and pagan traditions, I would say that, you know, just stay focused on the things that matter most.
Yeah, I think it encapsulates our history as well, doesn't it? So you can look through the traditions of Christmas, and you've got pre-Christian ones, you've got Christian ones, you've got you can see from it that a people that come out with a festival that is all about giving gifts to one another and caring for those who are less fortunate than us. I mean, it shows that we're at heart, we're a very good people, we're a merciful, charitable people, and I'm not sure that there are any other religions or peoples that have anything that comes even similar to what we have at Christmas. Well, thank you very much for coming on today, Truthfits.
Thanks for having me, Sven. Happy New Year to everyone. I hope you had a great one. Thank you.
Thank you very much for coming on today, Patriarch.
Thanks, Sven. Yeah, great podcast. So it's been interesting to learn about our culture and traditions. And Happy New Year to everyone.
Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. We will be back next week in the new year with another episode of Patriotic History for you. And until then, of course, we do hope you have a very happy new year and a great weekend.